Hey, all you Spotify listeners. Check the description below to answer the poll to see what monster you would like to hear next on The Monsters of Fantasy. Welcome to The Monsters of Fantasy. This was written, produced, recorded, and edited by me, Sean McCarter. Monsters of Fantasy is a production in which I will explore the truly horrific side of the fantasy world known as Dungeons and Dragons. There are content warnings in the show notes below. Episode 17, The Rock.
This is an entry for the legendary monster known as The Rock, taken from a letter written by Dame Commander Benham. I will get the important stuff out of the way, for I fear I may not be able to finish before my death croak. Be it by the elements or the wicked beasts that claim these lands, I feel the cold, dark embrace awaiting me. First, I have failed you, my king, and you, the gods. Sent forward in thy name, we have failed, not from lack of effort, for all your sigil-bearers were brave, but merely because we were fools. I suggest the next captain you send be better prepared for the horrors that await. That leads me to my next point. You sent us in hopes of new land, and I have seen it. Beyond the mountains and beyond the sea, I saw all the lands not yet cleansed by Pelor. Learn from our mistakes, King Civil, for there were many, and claim this land as your own. And lastly, maybe most important, my dear Tabitha, the love of my life, I will not be returning. The last 20 years we spent together were spent in pure joy and happiness. We have no children, so all of our estate and property is now yours. I know these words must be hard to bear, and I can just picture your soft eyes wetting the pages I now hold. But Tabitha, I beg you, please stop reading now. I want the memory you have of me to not be tarnished. Remember the valiant knight who swept you off your feet at tourneys. Remember the nights we stayed in bed together, and remember soaking in the saunas. Remember me as your brave wife, Tabitha, and not as the knight who fell from grace. And while you of all people, second only to the king, should know how I perished, I beg you to not read forward. I will begin with the night of our last correspondence. Forgive me, for I don't understand the arcane ways of the Archmage you sent with us, but it was my understanding that he was reporting to you every week. And if I'm correct in that, then you last heard we had gotten stuck in another canal of water, choked off by the frozen tops of the ocean. We had sent men out to carve our ship free from the ice, but alas, the gods of the sea are cruel and unforgiving. We tempted and provoked Umbra, I know that now. She warned us with many obstacles, the whirlpools, sharks, and the floating pillars of ice jutting out of the sea. But alas, she had caught us in a death grip made from ice. Our ship was trapped for 3 days, last you heard. We had men working effortlessly through the long nights to try and dig their way out of the ice. We took shifts in a dome of heat erected by Archmage Linus to keep us warm throughout the night. The first 2 nights trapped were spent on the deck of the ship. However, on the third night, we heard a massive groaning coming from the hull. It seemed the sheets of ice that had caught our vessel decided they so dearly wanted to meet. The captain, that dunce of a man you hired, beckoned that most of the crew stay the night off board the ship. His only smart decision, for that third night, just after updating you on the excavation, and after turning in for the night, the 2 sheets of ice became one. Despite how much the wood of the ship groaned and protested. Everyone awoke in the dead of night in a panic. I immediately saw that the ship had been destroyed, splintered all over the ice like a messy kindling of wood. I took command back from Captain Stratford and started ordering our men to salvage what was possible. Anything not yet floating to the blacks of the sea were dug out and organized. Before sun's rise, we had all clothes, rations, weapons, armor, and wood separated. Not soon before breakfast was it all rationed out and organized. The sad, bleak reality was that we had 17 men and women, and too little clothing and food to sustain us all. I figured we'd run out of food on the 5th day if we were lucky. The clothes weren't too terrible, as everyone knew the journey would be taking us north. But now, standing on top of the shifting ice sheets, it became very apparent we were not prepared for a march across ice. We had weapons and armor in abundance, but alas, nothing to use them against. There were no armies, no monsters, no animals. Just sheets of ice and far distant pillars signifying the moving icebergs. Occasionally, patches of ice broke up enough to form canals of black icy water, similar to the one our captain so daringly sailed us into. It was as we were discussing the idea of fishing in such spots did we first notice the god of the sky. First, the captain shouted, pointing at the sun's crest. At this point in our journey, I knew the sun would only rise a little more before settling back a few hours later. Such an odd occurrence we were not prepared for, but alas, one we had gotten used to. I said, "Yes, Captain Stratford, we should do well to get as much done during the few hours of sunlight we have." He responded rather promptly, "No, madam. Could you please look above the sun, there? Do you see the black line?" I squinted my eyes, and I had to admit, I saw something. Moving along the sunrise, a long, thin black line on the horizon. I looked over, and Captain Stratford had already pulled out that new looking glass Sir Talon invented. The one that allows you to look far away out to sea? It proved useful on the journey up until this point, but I swear the magics must have been broken. Captain Stratford said bleakly, with one eye squinted and the weird lens pressed to his face.
"It's a bird, madam."
"What do you mean it's a bird?" I exclaimed, looking at him.
Linus, whose hands were also cupped around his eyes, said solemnly under his breath, "Dear gods, that can't be a bird, Captain. That has to be an ancient dragon for us to be able to see it with the naked eye."
I remember I could hear the fear in his voice. So I snatched the looking glass away to still look at it myself. It must be broken.
What do you see? I heard Linus behind me.
A large bird. I had no better words to describe it. A large beast with a falcon's head was flapping on the horizon. It's just if the looking glass was true, then this was no bird we'd ever seen. I'd only heard fairy tales of ancient dragons to the east, but never did they wear the face of a falcon, my lord. I handed the glass to Linus, who, after a moment of looking, handed it back to me, while hefting out a large tome from beneath his robes.
"No," he started with a pained chuckle. "That is no dragon, I fear, my lady. I have absolutely the daftest idea of what it could be. But that thing is gargantuan in size, and looks like a bird of prey. I suggest you order your men to find shelter, or prepare to fight."
He didn't look up from the brown pages at all, as I asked him what he intended to do.
"Madam, I don't have any spells for running, and it's just a giant bird. How troublesome could it be?"
That was our first mistake, King Civil. I promise you, if your men see the Master of the Sky, if they see the great bird god descend upon them, then tell them to hide and not fight. First was the sheer speed and haste in which the creature arrived. I shouted at my men to start donning armor and weapons, bantering them on to slay such a great beast, and we would have food for days. That this fight for our lives was in more ways than one. Men scrambled left and right, grabbing armor and weapons. The ones in leathers and simple chainmail fared well at first. But there were a few of us, I included my lord, who were caught in the middle of dressing, and had to resort to the second option of running. And before you label me a coward, I beg you to read on. The monster, not even 2 minutes after being spotted, vanished into the clouds above. We figured we had a good 20 to 30 minutes before the monster could possibly have arrived to make an attack. But alas, the clouds parted above our camp before I could fasten my gauntlets. Chaos erupted on the ice as men grabbed weapons, others cowered, but many of them ran. Save Sir Linus, who was still preoccupied deep within his tome. The clouds separated rapidly as the monster came in from a dive, all of them flying away, repelled by a massive force as the monstrosity unfurled its wings to slow its descent. One flap, and we were all hit with a massive gust of wind. I saw Sir Linus's tome spiral out of his hands. He clutched at the air after it, and in the blink of an eye, he was gone. Not all of him. He left his legs behind, standing there, with his guts freshly spewing out. And not a heartbeat later was my entire field of vision filled with feathers. I ran my eyes in a panic, scanning the entirety of the monster's gargantuan size before I found its face. It had the face of a falcon, but its plumage and size was like none I'd seen before. Its wings weren't even outstretched fully, but its wingspan could fill the king's court twice over. It had to be at least 300 feet from tip to tip, and stood towering over any man another 70. Its breast and underwing were a beautiful white, the same color of the sky reflecting snow. However, all around its beak was a blood-red mask that turned to the darkest of blue right past the eyes, mimicking the night sky. The blue and red pattern could be found all along the tips of its wings and tail, but the bulk of its back was the same brown that most birds of prey carry. Its massive beak was wide open, large enough to swallow an entire battalion of horses whole. But unfortunately, the only thing spiraling above its beak was the upper half of Linus, organs and tattered cloth alike falling into its gullet. It swallowed and gave a bob of its long head, and with an ear-piercing shrill, this god, for that's what it had to be, the god of the sky, was letting us know that he had come here to feast. Men tried running, but it bounded and leaped after them, plucking them from the ground as easily as a finch plucks a seed. It made no difference whether they were in plate or chainmail. Everyone caught in the creature's grasp was cut down. It stopped only when it came to Sir Tomlin. He had managed to get dressed in full plate, but all the gleaming medals and house sigils only slowed him down. He swung a massive greatsword at the monster as it descended upon him. The blade cleaved a small chunk out of the beast's leg, only to fall clattering to the ground. The bloodied tip of the beast's talon was gleaming through his polished bronze. But as the beast launched itself with its wings, it noticed Sir Tomlin still affixed to its claws. It reached down with its beak to peel off what remained of the knight, but became perplexed by its armor. It flung Sir Tomlin to the ground and started working at him like a seagull opening a clam. At this point, anyone left alive had scrambled and hid, some under the piles of wreckage from the ship, others to the far-off ice pillars. But we all watched as the giant bird pried open the man's armor. It seemed he was still alive in there, screaming madly once the thing started flinging his entrails everywhere. Once the screaming stopped and the beast was finished with its meal, it became all but quiet, save the hushed and panicked breathing of Captain Stratford. It seemed that he and I found the same shelter underneath what used to be the sleeping quarters of the ship. We watched the bird start picking up bodies and piling them all together. Our dear friends and comrades we just broke bread with hours before were now being piled like a butcher preps a meal. Soon it became hard to distinguish the faces amongst the pile of the dead. At one point in its cleanup, the monster had found someone hiding. Gods bless them. Poor lad sneezed and the bird plucked him from his hiding hole in the ice. After the beast finished snacking on a few leftover bodies, it picked up the pile with its claws and came down for a second swoop to fill up its mouth. So many men carried into an early death in no less than 20 minutes. The last of us watched as the beast flew away, dropping a few limbs during its takeoff. I felt like we sat there for an hour, not moving amongst the carnage and bodies, but it could have very well only been a few minutes. Once we knew the beast was completely out of sight, and that was while we were using the special lens, did we move from our hiding spot and start searching for the others. There were only four of us left. Me, Captain Stratford, and two of the footmen we brought along, Caleb and Gale. We found the two, almost a kilometer away, hiding behind a large jutting pillar of ice. I tried to keep tensions calm, but emotions and voices were raised. I don't blame them. They all watched their adopted brothers and sisters of the last 6 months get butchered in front of them. The once vast whiteness of the ice sheets we were stranded on was now dotted and littered with the bodies and limbs of the slain. Blood painted the snow and ice, marking the one lone spot in this icy sea like a tombstone made of red. Snow started to fall, as if the frost maiden god Arul was trying to cover up the bloodbath herself. But no matter how much snow pelted down that night, all I could see was red. The next 4 days were spent in a bleak dreariness. We lost Gale to the cold. Hypothermia had set in her blood, and once her blackened nose fell to the ground, we added her to the dead outside. That happened on the second day after the attack, or the sixth day of being stranded. And that night, I believe, is when we lost Captain Stratford. I could see it in his eyes. He had lost his ship, and he had lost his crew. He was a broken man, and in the night I heard him slip away. He left all of his things here, save his uniform. And we have yet to find his body out in the vastness. The following morning, I found Caleb hunched over the fire, ripping apart a severed hand with his teeth. And I must admit, I did something not honorable for a knight of the King's Guard. I thought myself a stronger woman, someone made of more honor. But when the gnawing came at my stomach for the seventh night in a row, I feared I wouldn't see an eighth. But alas, I have Sir Tomlin to thank for my continued suffering. I also have him to thank for recording this encounter. It was in his waistband I found this, some unfinished scrawlings written in a happier time to a widow. I started writing this as an account of the events that happened, either before I went completely insane or perished out here on the ice. But, unfortunately, I fear this is the end of my writing. I see the beast cresting the horizon once again, and I refuse to die without a blade in my hand. Your Dame Commander, Lyanna Benham. Well, end of story. I know this is as shocking for you as it was for me to hear a personal account from the historic Northern Peak Expedition. I believe it was under the legendary Boy King Civil, who, after being crowned at the age of 12, sent a group of knights after he had heard rumors that an ancient city with advanced technology could be unearthed in the icy tundra that covers our northern hemisphere. This was something of a children's tale at the time. However, these expeditions that expanded into his early 20s before his untimely death did provide useful. While no technology was ever unearthed, we had gained great knowledge of our world, both in nature and arcane. So much so, he's renowned for having led many of these discoveries, like the discovery of an ancient gargantuan predatory species, something that, 1,500 years later, you can still find in almost any major history book. It was believed that there were no survivors from the expedition, and the fate of the first party was only known after the king waited 3 years and sent the second party out, where they found the wreckage and remains of the Golden Sun, along with the first ever record keepings of the rock. Physiology. Okay. I have to admit that I chose this one because, well, I'm a big fan of this monster, if that's the right word. To see one in person is just breathtaking. They are the largest recorded naturally occurring beast. There's nothing arcane about them at all. They don't come from other realms or from amongst the stars. They, through various research,
also seem to be the absolute oldest dated creatures still alive. It's no wonder they haven't evolved or changed in millions of years. They don't need to. The average wingspan of a rock stretches to almost 200 feet across, growing indefinitely with age. Which makes me wonder, just how old was the first rock that our nation encountered? They have talons larger than most men, and a beak the size of a cottage. But other than that, there isn't much special about them. They have the same basic anatomy of an eagle, while slightly more archaic in some features, and are quite obviously gargantuan in size. They are just birds. Luckily, they prefer a harsher climate than most normal people in the world, and you can go your whole life without encountering one of these magnificent creatures. Weaknesses and resistances. So while they don't have any true weaknesses or resistances, I feel that a brief marking of N/A does not do this creature justice. While normal weapons may hit and harm the beast as intended, no simple weapon wielded by a normal man would so much as put a dent in these creatures. Same in the regards of most poisons. And while they are not naturally resistant to them, you would need a large dose to harm such a creature. Honestly, your best bet is running and hiding. But if you must fight them, do so with caution and the use of magic. Attacks and abilities. Nothing fancy here, let's be honest. While my favorite entry so far, the rock is pretty straightforward. It's a large predatory bird. It uses razor-sharp talons alongside an equally dangerous beak to kill its prey. These weapons, as notated in the letter, can rip through any armor crafted by mortal men. It's no wonder the first people to ever encounter this creature thought it was a god. The scary thing, though, is how did Nico get his hands on an original copy? For, on the back of the first sheet, was the shaky handwriting of a forgotten soldier. Dear Lucy, we've been stuck for 2 days, and I fear I may not return.
Thank you for listening, and if you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with your friends and family, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at monstersof_ for all news and teasers for upcoming episodes. Join me next week as we start to delve into some iconic winter monsters with the Yeti. Thank you for listening. Until next time.